HRN has a brand new look, but we're sharing the same delicious stories. Invest in the future of food radio by becoming a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show celebrating Asian cuisine and culture as we have conversations with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. I'm your host, Linda Liu. Eric Tran of Falunsai didn't set out to open a restaurant during a pandemic, but the world works in funny ways. He got a call last year, somewhat out of the blue, from former Falunsai chef and owner Henry Tru. He wanted to hand the restaurant off to someone that would keep the Vietnamese cooking alive in the space. So Eric took a leap of faith and has never looked back since. He now operates the Bushwick restaurant as a reimagined 2.0 version, making his interpretation of delicious Vietnamese dishes with a focus on whole animal butchery and seasonally and locally sourced ingredients. This is Eric's first venture into owning a restaurant and serving the Vietnamese cuisine that is part of his heritage, after working with the amazing teams at Joseph Leonard, Jeffrey's Grocery, and Blue Hill at Stone Barns, just to name a few. Sometimes you can't plan for these major life changes, but you just have to seize the opportunity and go with it. So here's my conversation with Eric. Welcome, Eric. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hey, Linda. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up and what put you on the culinary path?
I grew up in the Chicagoland area, just in the suburbs of Chicago. I was born there, first born in my family in the United States. It was pretty interesting growing up there because being a pretty large city in a very large city, you know, with a very diverse community, I was something a little different because my background is about my father is Vietnamese and my mom is Mexican, so I had a really multicultural background growing up.
For sure,
I really loved growing up in Chicago because I could, you know, she had a chance to explore my cultures in a small scale in Chicago. I think it was a big eating city too. So we would always go out to eat on the weekends, especially, and go do dim sum on Sunday mornings. It was always like fond memories of eating as a kid. And I thought the background of Mexican people and Vietnamese people is very much of a community dining experience and a family dining setting. That kind of stuck with me in my mind, but I didn't really think about cooking and culinary path until I got into high school, and I randomly took a job at a pizza place. So that was my intro to restaurants.
You said in high school, I guess that's what kids do. Like they, you know, find their first job in a restaurant.
Yes. And it stuck with me. I think the energy was really awesome. I really enjoy being on my feet and working with my hands. I was a busboy, and actually my first job was taking the pizza orders. That was my first job. And I thought it was cool because there was free pizza at the end of the shift and a couple friends of mine worked there. Pretty simple enough.
But then I
kind of just worked my way up. I was busing tables and dishwashing, and then moved into like a host food runner positions. And I kind of just tried all the positions, and eventually I was a server first before I even got to cooking. Because after food running, usually you can take that route and go to the front of house and for a couple of years. And these were like at chain restaurants, right? Like I worked at Joe's Crab Shack in high school for a couple of years. Yeah, and I was a server there. And it was like high volume, very corporate, but I had like these like strict standards. So I learned the job pretty well. And it was pretty good training because it was a corporate environment. And the money was decent. So when everyone else was working in malls, making like, you know, $6.50, $7 an hour, I was making like $7.50.
Baller.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that was my very unromantic way of getting into restaurants.
Yeah, how did you end up in the kitchen side?
So I was working at a place that it was called a flat top grill situation where people would go to the buffet and like they bring you a bowl and then you cook their food at a flat top or stir fry style. And this place had a really unique schedule where they had people that were working as like grillers and then other days you were just doing prep. And this is like your stepping stone to get to serving jobs. So I was trying to get to serving jobs at this place. Like, oh, you gotta start here, but you gotta start. So I didn't realize I was cooking at the time. But I was looking at the temperatures, I was rotating, and I had to stop one of those things. Wash the vegetables. I didn't really think of it as a cooking job, but that was the beginnings of it. When I started working on that hot flat top grill, it was a lot of fun. Like a lot of fun. It was not quite any honest steps, but I was able to like flip trick there and catch it in the bowl or in my pocket. You know, fun things like that. I just thought it was very fun to, in personal, to see people right across from me and like watching you cook their food and like be very interested.
Yeah, that's definitely a motivating factor. Was there anyone in particular that inspired you to cook, or was it more just like, again, the physical experience that led you down this path?
It's funny that I think about cooking and food in like in two kind of different ways. Like when I was a kid, I have fond memories of it as a kid, just growing up. I would watch The Frugal Gourmet or Yan Can Cook with my father every week.
Mm-hmm.
All the time as a kid. In the early afternoons, we watched these shows. And
we watched cooking shows as a kid. My parents cooked quite a bit, actually. My father mostly stuck to Vietnamese food, and my mom, she would cook some Mexican food, but she really tried to show me and my sister a lot of American food. Like she would make meatloaf and like, we would make like pan pizza and things like that. So there was definitely a lot of that going on as a kid. And I randomly, when I was like in eighth grade, I think, took one of those tests where you fill out a bunch of questions. You know, it's a questionnaire, you fill out a bunch of questions, and then they give you like the 20 jobs that you may be interested in doing as an adult. And like chef was like number like 19. Or, I don't know, a large group. I just kind of like looked at it. Like, out of all this list, my eyes kind of gravitated toward that a little bit. Then I did a report on it, but then that was the end. I didn't really think anything of it until I got to like what, junior year of high school, senior year of high school, and I was working in a restaurant for like a year or two. I was like, hey, maybe I could do something with this. And I ended up going to culinary school over like being a mechanic. That was another weird fun hobby of mine. But, I went to culinary school and I got it immediately when I enrolled. I got a job in a restaurant. And I was cooking 7 days a week, actually, from that point on for like the next like 2.5 years between culinary school and working full time. I think that really that was really good for me. I learned so much. I was like, immersed in cooking, and I was in a kitchen just every day working, and it really took to me that you could kind of have fun at work and create things and. Just have this like very different energy where it requires so much focus. I was never a person that could sit down very long in school, so working on my feet is really good for me.
Yeah, so you've been cooking for quite a while then. You haven't stopped since since high school, essentially.
No, I haven't. It's been my, I guess it's my calling, if you will, because I've tried to do other things, but cooking is always... It's always been there for me, and I love it. It's cooking and learning about cooking. It's exciting because it's like a lifelong path because you're always learning. There's always something new to see, new ideas.
That's right. So how did you end up in Bushwick, Brooklyn?
Random chance, actually. The story of me taking over Falon Size is very random in the sense that. I was not looking to do it. I was not looking to open up a restaurant, actually. the previous owner, Henry True, reached out to me. He said, hey, ever any interest in buying a Vietnamese restaurant?
Wow. How did he find you?
We follow each other on Instagram.
The biggest connector.
Yeah. Right. It's funny because I'm not a big Instagram person, but I followed his restaurant because I thought it was very different and cool. You could see his personality and his food.
Right.
So when he called me and I was like, you know, I'm actually not really interested in doing this at all. This is June of 2020, right in the middle of COVID summer.
Yeah. And where were you?
I was working at Blue Hill Stone Barns at the time.
Okay.
And I had a great job, like an amazing job that I wasn't interested in leaving. I had insurance. You know, I was kind of situated. I was like, all right, you know, this is it was outside the city. So I got to have some, nice fresh air every day. So I'm in a good situation right now. I don't think I want to do something crazy like open a restaurant during the pandemic. But I met Henry and we talked. We had a great conversation on the phone, and then I met him a couple days later at the restaurant. After visiting a couple times and getting into nitty gritty, I realized that this is a really good deal. This is a really great situation for all parties. And if it wasn't for COVID, would I do this? And the answer was yes. I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I'm not afraid to take chances. And I was like, well, this is a chance I'd be willing to take because of this, just of the situation of meeting Henry and his landlord, who's not my landlord. It was very supportive, actually, and made the transition easy for me, which is extremely helpful in a time where everyone was going through so much and a lot of landlords were just, just not helping at all with people. So I feel very fortunate and lucky that this situation happened. And, for me, I really have to say that I don't know that what I'm doing right now would be working in another place, in another location, in another neighborhood, because I feel like this just happened by chance. And sometimes that's the best thing that could happen. People plan and plan and plan, but sometimes the best things just happen. So to me, this situation is really awesome. And Henry was really great in making the transition into Philonsai 2.0, which is something that we kind of refer to ourselves now as.
Yeah, super cool. And how did Henry choose to reach out to you? Was there like a specific motivation he was... or like philosophy he wanted to see in the next owner?
Yes, actually. It was, I don't think it was so much a philosophy as he just saw me cooking, like posting about like Vietnamese food all the time. That's what I was, when I would just make food for myself or food for my wife at home. And he's like, oh, I see you posting a lot about Vietnamese food. And then he just kind of triggered, kind of really good trigger for him. Because he had opened Philonsai 7 years prior, and prior to the restaurant, he had actually not been in restaurants, so he was a career changer, and he had not had been away from his family a lot, and it was a win-win for both of us. He found a way for him to transition out of the restaurant smoothly, and move on to a new situation for himself, and then for me to move into something that I'd never planned on doing, which is actually opening a restaurant in New York.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And during COVID as well.
Yes, and during the 2020 craziness.
Yeah. So how do you describe what you cook at Philonsai?
I kind of consider it to be a family restaurant. And my background, having my family was so mixed, and my wife is actually Chinese. So I have this, like, a lot of wiggle room to play with, but it's pretty, it's very Vietnamese focused and Vietnamese forward. That's most of my inspiration comes from. I definitely dabble with putting some Mexican things in there here and there. You kind of have to kind of hidden. You have to find them.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Like the blazing glaze is this dish that we had we still have on that we started during COVID, the takeout only. And it's just a thinly sliced pork shoulder that's marinated in honey and fish sauce and lemongrass. It's a take on this really awesome pork chop dish called gumzugnung, and if I pretty butchered that pretty well, but it's you know, basically like a sticky sweet pork chop, and this is just a thin version of it, and then we serve it with salsa verde, and there's a pickled pineapple on there in the pickle mix. So there's this, you know, it's it makes sense because it's pickles, and it's, you know, just a little bit different because it, you know, there's salsa verde in there, but there's a lot of ingredients that Vietnamese people and Mexican people just use. It's pretty funny, like banana leaves, for example, and chilies, and a lot of fresh vegetables. So I'm, you know, I'm learning myself, what I'm, you know, about what I'm really trying to do, which is like, you know, I explore Vietnamese food and Vietnamese culture, through my cooking, because, I didn't learn this growing up. You know, I ate a lot of Vietnamese food, like my father and my aunts, you know, cooked some really amazing food. But I didn't, you know, no one ever taught me how to cook Vietnamese food. You know, I learned how to cook, just like most other people, either through culinary school or through just trial and error learning. And for me, my goal was to do well in the traditional path so that I could eventually one day cook the food that I wanted to cook, which is, you know, the food of my family. Because to me, you know, again, like I mentioned, I'm exploring myself and my cultures through learning how to cook this food and researching for it. Trying to replicate and or just like make my own things that I ate in the past or seen in the past. So to me, that's a lot of fun. And it's also, it takes time. You know, there's so many things I want to do. You know, it's just one step at a time.
I love that. You're on your dream, basically, on your path to accomplishing, you know, your mission.
Yeah, it's not just a mission as much as just like a, you know, just as something that I never... I didn't know really how I was going to get there. So, you know, what I mean is that by that is, you know, when you go to culinary school and then you go on to try to become, a chef or you know, anyone in the hospitality industry, like you have this a traditional path of like, you know, moving into, after culinary school, you know, you get an externship and you go to a restaurant. It could be a fine dining restaurant. It could be a corporate situation. It could be a hotel. It could be, you know, club, resort. There's so many different paths you could take, and none of those, you know, especially when I was going to school, like led to me cooking Vietnamese food. You know, mm-hmm. like that just wasn't a thing. You know, like
right.
So it was about like being good at something, and you know, and getting to a point where you could, you know, make your own food and make, you know, make your own menus, and you know, maybe have your own restaurant. But to me, like, yeah, it was like, when am I going to get to do this? When am I going to get to, you know, actually cook this food that I've been, like, making at home for myself for many, many years? So, and here it is, you know, and it's just like that without, you know, I would never have dreamed that I'm doing it now. But here we are, you know, a year later, and, you know, I've been sitting in this restaurant that I literally 12 months ago stepped in for the first time.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West. HRN is excited to unveil the new look of Food Radio. We have a new brand identity and a new website. Our site makes it easier than ever to discover new podcasts and dig through our archive of 15,000 episodes. Wow, that's a lot of episodes. It's been 12 years since HRN started broadcasting Food Radio, and we've made it this far thanks to the support of our global listening community. It's because of member donations that Feast Meets West is on the air, along with 40 other weekly shows. Your contributions gave HRN the security we needed to stay on the airwaves during the pandemic and now allowing us to reopen our studio. If you enjoy this podcast, the best way to show your support is to become a member of HRN. And when you do, you'll get access to our very special secret menu. We have gathered exclusive discounts and offers from some of our favorite food and beverage brands. Enjoy insider pricing on goods that will ship right to your door. join our community of monthly donors. Special deals will come your way throughout the summer. A gift of $5 or $10 a month gives our community the stability it needs to keep the voice of America's food movement alive and thriving. At HRN, we're investing in the future of food radio. To do the same, become a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Welcome back. We're chatting with Chef Eric from Falansai. So Eric, I read on your website that you guys are butchering and purchasing your animals whole, right?
Yes, we are. And not to the extent that I would like, but the majority certainly is. And that's actually what has helped me get a little more clarity in my menu, because when you have less options, there's a little more focus. So we don't have a walk-in in Falansai. We just have reach-in refrigerators and low-boy refrigerators. So that space is super limited. And I was pretty ambitious to think of what I could get in there in the beginning. I could get a whole pig in there, but then I couldn't fit much else in one of my fridges, you know. So some of the things I've had to do is, like, you know, I started with mostly poultry in the beginning. So it was just ducks and chickens. On the first renditions of the menu and the takeout menu and stuff. I bought, a few extra things. I would get some ground pork and some things from our butcher. But other than that, I've had to be kind of get creative and be selective, because I this is the approach I want to take. So, we're using whole chickens, we're using whole ducks, we're using whole fish. I'm getting parts of lambs and parts of pigs right now. I'm not really using beef at the moment. Pretty soon, actually, we're going to start using beef, but I haven't had beef on the menu since it's opened, really. And that's kind of a strategy that I've taken because of cost and pricing and space and just the things I want to serve here. I have because it's a small restaurant, I have the ability to make some choices that I haven't been able to make before, which is my sourcing of the product and specifically with the animals. We live it's in the tri-state area. We live around so many amazing farms and farmers, and it's people that need support, and they are not only need support, but they are creating delicious things. And I'm trying to highlight that here at Falansai. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. And what about all the other non-meat related ingredients and produce? Do you source all of those locally as well?
Not to the entirety of the menu, but yes, very much so. With the availability of the farmers markets and some really great programs of logistics, like Veritas Farms is an example of a company that's trying to get farms from the Hudson Valley together so they can get their product out to the city, because logistics is not something that farmers typically do. So it's a little more of a challenge, and working with some of these programs now is pretty exciting. There's another program that I'm starting to work with. It's called Happy Valley Meats, and they work with farmers in Pennsylvania, and they help get their product out to chefs and people out here in the city. So these challenges of logistics, I see to be the one of the reasons why most people, tend to not always go for it, because they can't, even if they want to, it's right. Hard to get, they can't get it. So that challenge is, being met by some people. And I think it's pretty cool to keep finding those people that are out there that are trying to, help farmers and help chefs get their, get their product in the city that they really want to have. I mean, the Hudson Valley, everything's in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Vermont. I mean, there's so much great stuff around here.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's a great direction to go in.
Yeah. So to kind of go back to some other ways I get produce, I go to the farmers markets. I live in Queens, and I go to the Sunnyside Farmers Market on Saturdays and Jackson Heights Farmers Market on Sundays. I also go to Union Square usually typically on Wednesdays, Fridays, and or Saturdays as well. We're luckily the Falanza is right off the L train, and we can just pop right in and get to Union Square very quickly in the mornings and get produce back sometimes with a little cart. but it's all available. It's all here. And again, being a smaller restaurant, it's nice to be able to have the majority of my things come from local places and, you know, supporting these farmers.
Yeah, definitely. So what are some of the most popular dishes you've served so far?
Well, this blaze and glaze dish seems to be very popular. I mean, grilled pork has fried egg, lots of pickles and a spicy like fish sauces. pretty good. It's pretty neutral for almost everyone. So that's been selling really well. The egg rolls, which we call Dad's egg rolls on the menu, are probably one of the most things we've sold so far. Dad's egg roll. It's cool because, I mean, these are literally my dad's egg rolls. I used to, you know, make them. Or I actually used to just peel the skins. That was my job Saturday mornings. And he would roll them because I couldn't do it as well as I did back then. But Dad's egg roll sells very well. And then I would say I'm pretty excited about the curries. The green curry, you know, I challenged myself to make some really delicious vegan option. And it's one of the best things on the menu right now. I think it's really great. And I think one of the things that's really great about it is that it's always featuring market vegetables and through the winter.
Right. You can adapt it throughout the year.
Yeah, they change, but you know, the base is really great. And it's more of a traditional coconut milk based curry. And then the other curry that we have is a red seafood curry that we use. We make peanut milk. So instead of coconut milk, it's a peanut milk based curry, which it's pretty cool. It gives it a like nice nutty flavor, and it's just, you know, something different. And it's made with like lobster bodies and liquid from like cooking mussels and clams and shrimp shells. And it's, you know, it's super rich and very, you know, very oceanic, if you will. That's pretty great. We've done a few different renditions with that, but that base is super awesome. Right now we're doing it with the whole fish in the restaurant. You can get it fried or steamed, which is pretty fun. But that red curry is probably one of the things I'm most happy with, I would say, so far.
Awesome. You've got the full spectrum there, from vegan dishes to like full seafood and meat options. That's great. So I know you started with takeout due to COVID, but are things changing now that the city is, you know, opening up?
They have changed. It's certainly slowed down since, you know, we were right in the middle of COVID to now where everyone is going out a lot and things are opening back up. But it's slowed down. But I think what's kind of cool about that for me is what I've tried to do is have certain things available only for takeout. That gives things gives people a chance to, you know, try the menu and try things that, you know, make it a little special. A little incentive for them to, you know, try something different. What is that? That's like a pho. So we're not a noodle shop, and I don't have a lot of space, but we do have a grilled chicken pho that's on the takeout menu only. You can only get it to go. So to me, it's really great. It travels really well. It's great the next day. So I don't have a lot of space, so I can make a little bit each day. So I think it's great to reward people that are doing takeout, you know, with something really awesome like that. But then I can. My plan is to just have different offerings for takeout and give people a chance to try Falanza in a lot of different ways. Like, you know, takeout and delivery one day. Maybe one day you're going to come in and have some, you know, dinner with friends. Maybe, you know, you go to the backyard and get a large table and have a birthday there one day. But, I'm trying to create a different settings for people to come, like to have an opportunity to come try us out.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so far I think people are taking to it. It's fun to see.
And are you excited to finally have diners in person at the restaurant?
Oh, it's very exciting. It's super fun to see people's reactions. I mean,
that's why you cook, right?
It's very rewarding. Yeah, it's right. You see, you know, the chefs have, you know, short-term gratification traits. And, you know, when to come up with an idea to making it, to watching it go out, to seeing someone eating it, you know, it's a really great feeling. Eating is very personal to me. dining and eating is very personal. That's why when you come to the restaurant, it kind of looks like, feels like an apartment. Because that's one of my favorite things to do is to have people over for dinner. My wife and I love to have people over and just, you know, hang out and have some drinks and eat and listen to music. And it's kind of what Flansai is. And, you know, but it's a lot more fun to see people and serve people than it is to just put food in a box. I would say that's for sure.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're operating both sides of the business. So you'll be able to experience moving like takeout forward as well as expanding your experience dining indoors. That's really great to hear.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a journey, and I'm very excited to see where it goes.
And what's it like running your own restaurant for the first time?
Oh, it has its moments. There's such a difference being a business owner and having that responsibility for your employees and your staff. And I think it's so far been really enlightening for me, because I'm organized in a very particular way in the kitchen. And, I have to be organized in a different way when I'm dealing with the business side and thinking about, I have to think short-term and long-term all the time, and macro and micro all the time, and make sure what the options that we're thinking about and the direction that we take and the choices we make, they're the right decision for the business, because there's people here that we're employing, and there's a lot at stake when it comes to being a business owner as opposed to just being a chef, So I'm definitely embracing it, and I'm enjoying it. I'm happy to have the opportunity.
So of course you're super busy these days running your new operation. What do you do on your days off?
Yeah, usually having people over for dinner. but no, that's definitely something I like to do. My wife and I, that's one. We have 2 days off. One day with each other, and sometimes, most of those time that day off we have together, we plan on having a nice meal, whether it's at home or, occasionally going out to eat somewhere else. But usually we'll have, we'll go to people's houses and, potluck, bring some things and have a nice dinner. That's something we enjoy. I particularly enjoy riding my bike a lot, and I have a dog, so we're constantly doing fun activities on days off, dog park, long walks. And then I'm also just stopping by Flansai and fixing things.
That's right. That sounds great. Your whole life has been oriented around food. So of course, like when you're working and also just having fun, it's still food oriented.
It is.
It sounds like a very delicious life.
It can be. That's where the riding my bike helps out with that.
And that's it for our show. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. We truly appreciate your support, and it would mean so much if you could leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another conversation from the world of Asian food. Feast Meets West is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.